Welcome to the fourth Peridot podcast, Conversations with Leaders. I'm Emma Rafter, and I'm delighted to introduce our special guest this episode, Ayanna Vidal. This is a special series of our podcast to coincide with Trustee Week and to talk all things governance. So while Ayanna is Head of Policy and Government Affairs at Innovate Finance, she is also Chair of Trustees for Girls Friendly Society and a School Governor for Durance School in Enfield. She's also a volunteer for one of my favourite charities, Anthony Nolan, so it's really good to have you here.
Thank you, Emma.
And we've obviously recently worked with you to recruit Executive Director at the Girls Friendly Society. And for me, it was really interesting to hear that the charity is one of the oldest registered charities in England and Wales. I think it was first registered in 1875.
Yes.
So it'd be interesting to hear a little bit more about what the charity does and how you came to be a trustee and chair as well.
Fab. Well, yeah, so we have a very long history. We were founded in sort of the general, I guess you could say, that Christian charity movement in the 1800s. So we support girls across England and Wales, helping them to develop confidence, resilience, well-being, but through a very relaxed, safe space. We do activities and games after school, and we take them on trips, and we generally try to sort of give them experiences that broaden their horizons. It's all delivered by some absolutely fantastic volunteers on a weekly basis. They really are incredibly committed. I mean, we've got a great staff team as well who manage things centrally. I have been on the board for 4.5 years and I have been chair for 3.5 years. And in that time, we have changed immensely. Sometimes I forget how far we've gone. I think because in my head, we still have much further to go. So I've got a checklist of things that I need to do. But yeah, we're growing and we're changing. We're a membership body, so we have really dedicated members as well. And it's a really exciting time, I think, to be at GFS because feminism and gender equality has never been a bigger thing.
Yeah, as we can see, the press at the moment particularly.
Yeah.
And with that, so did you start off as a volunteer yourself?
So I was on our youth work committee for 2 years. So I actually applied to be a trustee and I was told by our director at the time that she had another role in mind for me. And that was to sit with our girls who come together and make decisions about the charity. So it was really good to sort of see from that level how decisions are made and get young people involved. And it's one of the things that I'm very passionate about is getting young people involved in decision making. So I did that for 2 years and then I was invited to join the board, which was an incredible opportunity. Yeah. You sort of don't even realise, especially me as a first-time board trustee, you don't even realise what's involved until you get there and you get there in those meetings and you realise, wow, this is serious and I'm really making a difference in the things I'm doing.
So is there anything that you felt that you had to learn about, or were you given support and training, or, you know, was there any sort of mentoring process or and the induction that you had at a board? I mean, that's quite a lot of questions there, but how did you go about it, essentially?
It's an interesting question. I'm a natural geek, so if I'm given anything, I literally read around it until I'm blue in the face. So I did a lot of sort of like reading myself to educate myself on what was needed. But I think one of the things that I recognised when I joined was that we probably didn't have a structure in place to induct people onto the board and to make them feel comfortable about being a trustee, especially because a lot of the people that sometimes we had joined had never been on a board before. So one of the things that I've worked on over the last few years is to really put that system in place. So now all of our new trustees, I assign them a buddy. I send them a list of all of the training they can go on if they want to, and if they find anything else, they're welcome to do so. I try to check in with them every couple of months just to check and see how things are going on. And obviously I'm learning all the time about how to do that, but we've just had a trustee join over the last 6 months and I think it's going well. She's already decided she wants to get involved in the finance side of things, which is usually something that no trustees want to get involved in. So that in itself is a win for me because we're always looking for trustees to get more involved in the deep dive of that. And she doesn't come from that background. So it shows that it's working.
Oh, wow. That is incredible. And you mentioned before that the charity has changed quite a lot in the last few years. What have those changes been?
Well, I think when I joined, we were sort of in a really interesting place where the charity had been going obviously for a long, long time, but probably had lost its way a bit and it had been taken over by other youth charities. I mean, we've got our competitors, Girl Guiding, Young Women's Trust, the Girls Network, who I think are absolutely incredible. We sort of didn't really know where we fit and we had a lot of identity issues and just sort of being strategic about what we wanted to do. So the board over the last few years has made a lot of decisions about where we position ourselves strategically, where we invest, and it really is in that branch group work at a local level, working in communities with girls and young women where they are. we've rebranded.
Yeah, your brand is lovely.
Yep. I'm wearing my jazzy GFS pullover today, but we've rebranded. We've got a new look, new website, really invested in digital communications because obviously we know that that's something that really helps charities to kick up to the next level. So we've still got more to do. We definitely have more to do. And one of the key things for me, and I know that it's on the mind of a lot of charities, is financial sustainability. Yeah. I know that our financial position, I really want to diversify our income streams and just make us feel a little bit more stable. So that's one of the things that we'll be focusing on for the next few years.
So you've done a lot.
Yes.
So how do you make the step up from being a trustee to the chair of the trustee board?
Do you know what? I sort of don't remember where it happened, where everyone turned around in the meeting and was like, so we've decided you're going to be chair. And I just sort of had to take it. Yeah, it's a steep learning curve, essentially, because one of the most challenging things is that you are line managing a very experienced senior leader. Mm. And especially me as someone who's, I guess, in the middle of my career, it's about me understanding the things that I don't know and going out and finding those out and being able to support them. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges, understanding how those people operate. And I think I'm very lucky in that in my day job, I work very closely with CEOs and senior leaders. So I sort of understand from that sense. Mm-hmm. But to go to line managing that person, and I think striking that balance of being there for them and being present and answering the questions and being that conduit between the board and them, but also knowing when to sort of take a step back and just let them get on with it and deliver it in the way that they want to. That's a real challenge.
And is that also around both of you sort of setting the boundaries that you want and I guess very practical steps to allow that relationship to happen as well?
Yeah, and I think it takes a lot of understanding how each other works. I think one of the things I've definitely learned over the last few years is that it's really easy to know when someone's struggling or they aren't quite getting it if you're in the office with them every single day all the time and you know how they operate. It's so different when actually you've got your own very demanding day job, but you have to have one eye on the fact that for some reason something's niggling you and it's because you're just not perhaps getting the response that you would usually. Mm-hmm. And just and understanding how to broach that and say, do you know what, it seems like you're struggling with this a bit, do you want some help, do you want to sit down and talk about it? It's quite difficult for a senior leader to do that, and I think there's developing that relationship with them and getting to a point where they can say, do you know what, I don't really understand, and me sitting down and saying, well, let's work through it together like we're a team, let's bring in some other board members, let's maybe go externally, we can solve the problem if we work together on it, and doing it that way.
So feeling very supportive and nurturing.
Yes, yeah, I think so. And I think another thing that I'm very keen on, and I guess it's because it's from my own personal background, is that everybody takes a job for a challenge, right? You don't go and take a job because you think you're going to sit there and coast. So if you're taking a job as a senior leader of Girls Friendly Society, it's because you can see that there's something in there that there's a challenge in there, you're going to develop, you're going to learn something new, you're going to grow. So I think it's also about understanding what that person wants to do personally and thinking where they want to go, where they see their career going, how long they're going to be with us for, and where the next step is, and what we can do to help them to get there as well.
Does that mean that, I mean, one of the things that we come across a lot in charity is directors and CEOs not actually having proper performance reviews. Mm. So is that something that you guys look at and actually, you know, instill and make sure that is happening?
Yeah, so again, when I started, there wasn't really a framework for the chair and I guess the senior leader to sit down and talk about that. And one of the first things I did was, if you're having one-to-ones with your direct reports, it's the same with me. It might not be as frequently as every 2 weeks or whatever, but at least every month, 6 weeks or so, we catch up, we have a phone call or we have a meeting and we just sit down and we go through everything. It gets more intense, especially leading up to the board. So a lot of the time, if there's a board meeting, we'll usually have a chat a couple of weeks in and out of that to make sure all the papers that we've got, everything we need is prepped. And as a membership body, we have an AGM. So that takes a lot of work. So we have an AGM and a national weekend, and leading up to that, we have a lot of FaceTime as well so that we can make sure we're on the same page with things.
And the board culture is really important to making this work. So how would you describe the culture that you have as a board?
So again, I think it's a work in progress. And I think we've moved on so much from where we were before. I think GFS is an absolutely brilliant organisation, but it's probably suffered from having probably pretty much zero external reputation, which meant that it couldn't attract the sorts of people that we want to bring in to grow. So what I've really tried to do is work on the external appointments that we can have to the board. So we have a portion of our board membership are elected by the members and the rest are appointed. And I think that mix is so good because it's just the right amount of organisational knowledge and understanding. Someone will remember something that happened in the 70s that is actually really important for this discussion. And you'll never know where it comes up. It comes up in buildings and all sorts that we used to own and that we still might own. But equally having, you know, a good legal trustee, a good finance accountancy trustee, and having that experience from externally and bringing that in to help professionalise more of what we do in that space. So I think we've got a really good mix of people at the moment who bring all of those different skills together. And actually, I think we're working better than we ever have done. We've made some really big decisions over the last few years. And it's not without challenge. It's not without people coming out and saying, actually, I'm not sure I agree with this or that. But, you know, I'd like to think that apart from the fact that my chairing of the meetings is awful and we always overrun, but I say it's because we're working on so much, that's why. Actually, we're in a really good place in terms of how we're sort of working together.
And is there anything else aside from the chairing of the meetings that you find challenging being a chair?
I think definitely it's a step up in terms of strategic thinking, but it's obviously one of the things that I wanted to do when I applied for the role is to develop that more from a personal perspective. I think that if you spoke to my family, they'd say I'm a very impatient person. I want things to move at 100 miles per hour. So one of the things that I've definitely had to do and learn about is that it's being patient. And I think I'll always sit down and say, we're going to do this and it's going to be done in 12 months. And actually, the more you get into it, the more you realise that's not the case. So one of the things that I've learned being chair of GFS is that actually things take time and it takes time to do them well and to do them properly and to bring everyone with you. So I think that's an added sort of challenge that I've had to face and that I think probably a lot of other chairs will face too. When you're staring down the barrel of money and other sort of challenges, you want things to happen immediately, and actually that's not necessarily the best thing.
No. But do you think it's helped you as well in your day job?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, I used to be a massive perfectionist and I can't afford to be these days. And actually GFS has taught me that, you know, I used to be a real stickler for things and it probably wasn't a very sort of healthy way to be. And what I've learned is that actually, you know, sometimes the team use, I'm you know, a comms professional by background. Sometimes the team use language that I wouldn't necessarily use, but that's okay because that's them just sort of like figuring out what our brand and what our tone and what our style is. That's absolutely fine. That's something that I've had to learn.
Yeah, sometimes it's okay to be good enough.
Yes.
As long as you're always thinking about how can we get better in other
things. Exactly, yeah. And I think we're in a really lucky position in that sense. That's really important that we have all of this history and we have all of this background, but we're still quite small. Mm-hmm. So we're not ex big charity with like hundreds of staff. We're a very small team. We can sort of move fast and break things, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that if we can try something, and you know what, if it doesn't work, it's very easy to sort of look at it, think, how do we change this? How do we improve and move on to the next thing? So that's one of the things that I really want our team to sort of focus on for the next phase, is that actually it's okay to do things, try things, make mistakes, realise it's not quite right, as long as we're always learning and improving.
That's quite freeing, I would say, for a team, and particularly the leaders within the charity, because you don't often get that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's quite exciting.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, it's, in many ways, it's good for me to think about all of the things that I would like in my day job and see how I can bring them into GFS and we can implement those ideas there.
Yeah, that's really exciting. What does good governance look like for you?
I mean, this was like a test of what's on the Charity Commission website, doesn't it? Yeah. I've been reading my NCVO materials. I think it's two things. It's about having all of those things, that looking at that guidance and having that framework in place. And one of the things that I've worked on, again, over the last few years is to really set that in stone and hopefully build a foundation for whoever comes in and does chairing for the next sort of stint. But it's about understanding all of the things that we need to do as a board. So understand the financial management, risk management. Safeguarding is obviously a huge issue in the charity sector, but especially for us working with children and young people. So there's all of those sort of key regulatory and legal aspects to deal with. But equally, I think it's about understanding your role as a trustee, that you make decisions in the interests of the charity, that you make decisions that are going to, you know, put the charity on a good financial footing, that you make sure you do your homework, that it's everything, all decisions are well researched, and that, you know, I think it's sometimes tricky with us because a lot of the people on our board or who are very involved in helping us make decisions have such a long history with the organisation. I think it can be a challenge, I think, sometimes to think about right, well, this is where we were before, but we need to think about where we're going in the future. And sometimes I think we hold ourselves back in terms of thinking about where we used to be and what we used to do, and we have to look ahead. So I think there's also, I think in thinking about governance, I'm really keen to sort of get people to understand that we're thinking about the future of the organisation, mm-hmm. setting the foundations for growth and sustainability way ahead. You know, we're 145 years next year. I want us to be around in the next 145 years, notwithstanding the fact that the planet might not be here. But if it is, yeah. I want GFS yeah. to still be around. So it's thinking about how we as trustees can make sure we put that framework in place so that we're going on for the next 145 years.
And is there something that you've put in place in terms of how the Board of Trustees manage each other and make sure that everyone is performing?
So, I mean, my trustees would like to say that I check in with them very regularly. And it's interesting because obviously I'm a very, you know, I'm a millennial. I've worked in an office environment my whole life. So for me, it's about sending off a quick email or a text or a WhatsApp. Some of our trustees are a bit older. They don't necessarily use technology a lot, although they all have iPads and email addresses and things like that. So they do know what they're doing. But I think a lot of the time as well, you know, we're in a really interesting place in that a lot of our trustees don't live in London. So even though we meet in London, those of us who are in London will try and catch up with each other. But it's a lot harder to do that if you live in sort of in Sheffield or in Manchester. So I do try to check in with them quite regularly. And what I've tried to start doing is we're in the process of strategy development and thinking about what we do for the next 5 years. So what I've started to do is try to plot trustees against those different things. They've got something that they're working on that they feel they've got ownership into. Of yeah. and that it's related to their interests and what they do. I mean, we're lucky in that we've got presidents on our board, an English president and a Welsh president. So as far as I'm concerned, one of them's responsible for Wales and the other one's responsible for England. But I think thinking more about that piece, about how everyone can have a portfolio that they own and that they're proud of and that they push forward with the staff and the volunteers, I think that's one of the things that I've been trying to get us to do.
Yeah, because that's empowering, it's accountability, and that's again, it's very exciting. I mean, looking at your website, it feels very progressive and modern, yeah. and it feels like it represents what's happening now.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, looking at some of your other competitors, it doesn't feel quite that same level.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's it's really nice.
That's really nice, because as I said, we're always learning and improving. We're always trying to think about what we can do to really engage people, but especially girls and young women. So that's really lovely, because as I said, we've come a long way from what we were doing before, and I'm really proud of the stuff we're doing around our brand, our identity, our communications. Yeah, we've been retweeted today by the sort of someone from the UN, someone who works high up in the UN in New York or something, and I was looking at it like, how did we do that? Who did that? Who managed to get that, you know, that stuff that we didn't even have a Twitter account a couple of years ago. So that's in itself amazing.
Yeah, but that's what you need to be using to be able to communicate with, you know, your audience, your key audience.
Exactly.
So recently you obviously did a key piece of recruitment for your new executive director. I think what I wanted to ask is, what were you looking for? And I guess how, as a chair and a board, you support inclusive and diverse recruitment?
So we're in a really interesting phase in that we're really looking to kick up our sort of our external presence and our fundraising. So those were the sort of, I guess, the key operational things that we were looking for. I think personally, I was always also looking for a really compassionate, collaborative leader. And I think recognising that we're a small charity, someone who can do that strategic piece, but who can also get stuck in and roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty when needed, because we don't have a huge amount of resource. You know, finding that person is, if you can find that person, you're really onto a winner. It's a lot to ask. And, you know, on top of that, we're a complex organisation. We've got a long history. Our financial situation is very complex because we've got some investments that take a lot to get your head around. So, you know, throwing all of that at somebody and saying, right, do you still want to come and work with us, is in itself a bit of a challenge. But I think it's that thing. It's sort of understanding that strategic piece and having that vision and passion for the mission and understanding where we as the board, and I guess as the staff and the volunteers and the girls, everyone involved in the charity, where we want to go, and being able to sort of like put that into your little box and think, right, this is where I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it forward. See, I think that's what we were looking for. In terms of inclusive and diverse leadership, where I think we're in a really lucky position in that we attract incredibly experienced women. It's almost intimidating, to be honest with you. But it's a real I'm really proud that we're able to offer that opportunity to some really great people. And obviously, yeah, we worked with Peridot, and one of the things that I said, I was like, I know you know, but I want a really diverse list of candidates, so do what you can to get that. And that's exactly what we got. So I think it's about being very clear that that's what you're looking for, really diverse, not just, you know, sort of protected characteristics, but diverse backgrounds and skills and coming at it from different perspectives.
I think, though, that your brand and your communication and your language lends itself to that.
Yeah.
And that's very key. You know, when you have that, that makes the job of recruiting and attracting those people easier.
Yeah.
And it's something that people don't really think about sometimes.
Yeah, well, I like to think that we're exciting, that what we're putting out there is exciting, gets people excited, and then they dig in the weeds and they realise there's a lot of stuff to do and there's a lot of challenges, but those two combined together mean that actually it's a really interesting prospect, and I think that's what we saw with the recruitment process that we've just done. So,
Right. In our last podcast, we chatted to Uzma, who is the Deputy CEO at Greenwich Students Union, and she talked a lot about being a BAME woman and not seeing people who looked like her in leadership roles. And I just wanted to sort of ask about your experience, especially as being a BAME female chair and trustee.
Yeah, that completely resonates with me. Yeah, definitely in the charity sector. I've worked in the charity sector, so I've experienced it obviously from the staff side. It's even worse when you go into charity investments. I went to a seminar recently where I was one of two women and one of two BME people in the room, and there are about 200 people in the room.
Wow.
So it's even more intimidating when you get to the financial side of things. Yeah, I'm really passionate about this. This is my, if there's one thing I'm going to crack when it gets GFS, it's about having diverse, inclusive leadership on our board and actually throughout the organisation. We've got some, I think we're in a really good place in that we've got some really interesting trustees from different backgrounds and things like that. And we do things like we meet on Saturdays, and we have a very inclusive, transparent advertising process. So it's not a tap on the shoulder to so-and-so. I don't know anyone from my age who would want to come and do this. And actually, that's a key challenge. But what we do is that all of our roles, whether it's on committees or on boards, are advertised on Charity Job, advertised on Women on Boards. And that attracts some really great candidates and people that aren't in our network, have never heard of us before, but are really excited by what we do. We've got a really good induction process. And actually, I think one of the key things about attracting and keeping BAME people on boards and getting them on as trustees is recognising that they're volunteers, that they're volunteering their time, and that some of them might not come fully formed. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I'd never been on a board before, and now I'm chair. But actually, in order to do that, in order to get the best out of those people, you need to invest in their development. So obviously, we're not paying our trustees, but we're providing them with development opportunities. We're sending them on training. If there are gaps in their knowledge or their skills they want to learn or things they want to drive for the organisation, then we will invest in that, because for us, that means that we're investing in the charity and where we're going. So I definitely think that charities that want to be more inclusive should look at that whole piece, from recruitment to, I guess, keeping and retaining that talent. But there are lots of really cool initiatives out there. I'm so delighted to see Beyond Suffrage that was launched recently, because I think that's obviously a really key thing that's going to ramp up at least loads more women like me and who look like me on boards. The Young Trustees movement is incredibly exciting, and there are loads of other organisations that I know that recruit trustees as well as Peridot.
Yeah.
So I think it's about getting away from that old school sort of like just speak to somebody in your network. And I definitely think if you're able to bring those people in, it will help attract the next generation of people. So if I looked at a board these days and it was just all sort of like corporate men, no offence, but that doesn't look like, they might be great. They're probably wonderful and they're clearly very, you know, they've got a very civic minded approach, but that doesn't look like the sort of place that I feel that I could be able to grow and actually deliver, you know, do well in. So I think you have to bring those people in, show them that you're a good prospect, and then hopefully other people will see and think, oh, hang on a second, they are investing in it and they are really serious about diversity, and it will just go from there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also think about the fact that you're actually developing and spending money on training is really good, because you don't see that either. You see often boards want to not, you know, they don't want to be align the budget, yet actually to develop that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And that's so key. So it's really refreshing to hear that.
Yeah.
And again, exciting. You're also a governor.
Yes, I take on a lot on my little plate.
Yeah, and how does that... And so it's a joint school in Enfield. How did you get involved in that? And is it very different to your trustee role at Girls Friendly Society?
So a theme with a lot of my volunteering is that I always think it would look really good on my CV. It's the grammar school girl coming out in me. So yeah, I've been a durance governor for, I think, 6 years now. And Durance is really different because it's a specialist secondary school for autistic children. So we're not, you know, we're not a usual secondary school. Our young people aren't going to come in and do GCSEs and A-levels. They're going to come in, and some of them come in and they can't speak. Some of them can't even walk into school. And actually what we do is about helping them to develop those sorts of skills to the point where they leave and they understand how to use money, how to cook for themselves, how to wash and dress and sort of like at least go out into society and feel like comfortable. I am a big passionate supporter of local authority funded and supported schools because the difference between being a governor and being a trustee is that all of that framework is there for you. Yeah. So all of, you know, all of our agendas are basically set by the local authority, all of the policies we need to read, all of that support comes from our local council. And it's really, you know, it's really experienced, it's really specialist. We've got people who've been working with us for years who really understand our school. And who've invested in what we do. We're just about to open a new site in a couple of weeks' time. So we've been a real prospect for our local authority, and it's the framework that's there that helps you to do that. So, you know, being a governor is actually quite sort of, it's relatively easy going. And I always say it's, you know, when they say, oh, how's it going with GFS? And I'm like, well, we've got a lot to do. So it's really good that you guys have just given me an opportunity to just come and say yes, yes, no, because that's great. I don't really have much bandwidth to do anything else. But yeah, I love it, and I think it's another really good way for people who are interested in what's happening in their society and in their community to get involved in sort of and give back.
Well, it also, when I was reading your profile, one of the things that really stood out for me was your passion for volunteering and ambition to support and empower people to effect positive change both at local and national level. And I just wanted to ask, you know, this seems to be inbuilt within your values, and why is it so important for you?
Do you know, I don't really know, to be honest with you, but I like to think that I guess my background or how I've grown up is that my parents and you know, my family have always been involved in extracurricular things. So my dad is a chair of a charity as well. He's volunteered for loads of charities. My mum works in public services. So I think it's just a general, my sister works in charity. Like, I don't know what it is, but I guess between us, we're all very excited about that. And it means we're probably all exhausted at the end of the day. But I just think, yeah, I'm only on this earth for a short time. If I can make a little bit of difference in the world around me, then I've done it. I've done my job.
Brilliant. And you also volunteer for Auntie Nolan.
Yeah. Although they'll tell you that I've just told them that I'm taking a step back. Oh. But you do
sound quite busy.
But I love it's brands and it's charities that I love working with and that I'm passionate about. And I still tweet about them all the time. I still go to my blood donations regularly. And any chance that I get to tell people about them, I still do. Yeah. If I could have all of the time in the world, I'd be volunteering for like 10 different charities.
Yeah, I can see that. Is there any advice that you'd give to anyone who's thinking about becoming a chair or a trustee, actually?
I think just go for it. I think there's a tendency to think that there's some sort of dark arts or some sort of mysticism involved in being a trustee or even a chair. I'm thinking that you have to have reached a certain level in terms of your career. You have to be a portfolio sort of non-exec. You have to be connected. And again, I think that's an old mentality. You have to bring in X amount of fundraising or money so that you can have a seat on the board. I think that's a really old way to look at things. And obviously, yes, it's important to be able to bring to bear what you can, you know, your leverage your networks and make sure that you're helping the charity develop. But equally, there are other skills that people have, even if they're not sort of the CEO of Barclays Bank. And I think, as I said, the movements that are coming in that are encouraging, you know, those different sorts of people to get involved are really sort of shining a light on the fact that there are skills that lots of people have that they might not even realise that would be really useful. So I think definitely go for it, but go for it with both eyes open and recognise that it is a big commitment. It's a lot of work. You have to be really dedicated and committed. And I guess I'm really lucky in that I've got the board and the staff and volunteers who all recognise that and are helping to support that.
Yeah, and also I think people need to realise that, as you said, if you're developing your trustees, then they might be with you for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years and think about the awesome potential there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And even when they stepped out, I've just been signed up to give my direct debit to GFS. So knowing me, I'm not going to cancel that. So even when I leave, they're going to have that for the end of time. Yeah.
It's 145 years. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really interesting to meet you and very inspiring. And also just to find out more about the Girls Friendly Society, because, you know, I hadn't known about them until we started working with you. And they just sound brilliant. So I do encourage everyone to go and check them out because they're looking for volunteers.
We're always looking for volunteers. So thank you very much.
And we will put a link on the podcast so you can have a look. And to the rest of our listeners, you can download our other podcasts at peridopartners.co.uk/leadership. And you can also join our leadership network. Thank you.